He wasn't really very full in his instructions or ideas on what to do. But I was willing to say yes because I had gotten something in the mail from the Christian Doctor magazine. I'm a member of the Christian Medical and Dental Society. And I have used that, and I can provide that to make copies and send out the article that's in this magazine. And I said in the last meeting that there's a shift in the world view, and that's what this discusses, the world view. I teach Sunday school. I had two graduates of Grove City College. I went to Grove City for one of their meetings, seminar, and they talk a lot about the world view. And I've read some of the books that have been written at Grove City, and having done that, I have been more comfortable with this idea of a world view. And the world view is what people understand and know. And as far as I can determine, their parents don't know what's going on. So if you say to your kid, abortion is wrong, they're going to say, well, it's wrong for you. Because they don't understand that there is anything like right and wrong. Now, we had a Western Association meeting, not this association, but the Western Association of Regular Baptist Churches. And at that meeting, Dr. Colas, who I really miss at this meeting, who was my pastor for some time, called me out as a educated person, two doctoral degrees, and said, what do you do for college students? I said, teach the word. That's all I said. Now, when I was in college, I had a college career Sunday school class, and when I was actually in the military, I had a college career Sunday school class actually in Cambridge. The first one was at Troy because I went to RPI. And I had a fellowship there, and things worked out pretty well there until some of us started to commit matrimony. There was a young lady who came in to visit one night, and it was kind of a shocker to my roommate because he had been led to the Lord by this girl on deputation who went to Haiti on evangelized field missions. And he was torn. He loved her, but he didn't want to bring her away from the Lord's work. So this girl visited the church Sunday night, and I used to say hi to the new guy, and pick one of the group and assign them that job. And I took it upon myself. I gave her a ride home, and I went to Friendly's, where I took all the kids to Friendly's, and the girls in the group said, Earth to Mark. And I told my roommate that night, who couldn't decide about this girl, went to Haiti every Christmas with her mother, and been married now 40 years. I said the night I met, she visited the church that night, I said, I'm going to marry her. In August, it will be for us 40 years. And we have 7 children. So my history, who am I? I am Christian. I was saved when I was 8 in a FBHM work. I was baptized when I was 10. Went to school and was very successful in school. Offered scholarships every place I applied. I went as the Central New York Alumni Scholar to RPI. I went there in 1965. I left in 1970. I turned in my graduate study fellowship and went on active duty in the Air Force. I'm a Vietnam era veteran. I never got issued dog tags. I was never overseas, never was anywhere near combat. My association had 10 civilians for every blue suit. Did my PhD thesis on active duty. I went to MIT, post-PhD in biomedical engineering. Then I went to Harvard Medical School as a part of the HST, Health Sciences Technology program. I went to medical school in Syracuse. Then I went to do orthopedic surgery at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, or as I'm prone to say, Philadelphia. So it was a nice place. We lived in New Jersey during that time. I started medical school with four children, or two. One was 3 days old. Ended with four. Went to residency. Ended residency with six. Now we have seven. So that's who I am. I'm a member of Middletown Road Baptist Church, and I'm the camp doctor for the Slippery Rock Baptist Camp. So, having said that, the thing that I thought was inherent in a talk about faithfulness, which has thus far really been well covered, faithfulness is an attribute of God. Psalm 89. I will sing of the mercies of the Lord forever. With my mouth will I make known thy faithfulness to all generations. And then the whole psalm. It's commanded of us. It's required of God. 1 Corinthians 4. And we've just gone through that. Examples in the scripture shows that God rewards the faithful. Proverbs 28:20. A faithful man shall abound with blessings. He that maketh haste to be rich shall not be innocent. So that's faithfulness. Faithfulness is crucial and essential to our ministry. We have to be consistent. We have to be faithful. And I think the key to faithfulness is to follow the Word of God. It doesn't change. It's alive. It's sharper than a two-edged sword. And what we have in our society now is a worldview that doesn't acknowledge right and wrong. And for example, homosexuality, I saw some things on the TV at lunch that talked about that. And the activists would make us think that homosexuals are common, like 20%, where it's really about 1%. And they have promoted the idea that it's biological. People are born that way. That's not true. 130 scientific papers were reviewed, and no evidence of that has ever been shown. There are a lot of examples that I could point out. And Pastor Deere DeHez, in the last issue, I think, of the bulletin, talked about our need to be in the Word, and also has talked about how the church could be attacked. Now, you know, I live in a little different world. I was a soldier. I was a physicist. I was an engineer. And I've been a doctor. I was a biomedical engineer. And I've done a lot of things. And as a physician, I can tell you a real story about a doctor who was attacked by a patient who he treated very compassionately and competently, but he refused to sign the paper for that patient that he would sponsor or approve of their adoption of a child because he was homosexual. He couldn't in conscience do that. He lost his job. He could not get a job in the community. He had no wages. He did charity work for no income. The court found in his favor and awarded him nothing for lost wages, his retirement fund, paying his court costs. And I actually find myself in a similar situation, having been in a lawsuit and having not succeeded. But that's an example, that's a real example of someone who has been severely injured about this. So when Dr. Deere talks about the church could be attacked next, I'm sure there are isolated examples, but I'm very much concerned that there would be massive attacks. And, for example, Rick Warren, how many millions of books has he sold? He seems to be untouchable. When he was picked to give the inaugural prayer for Obama, he was fired. He was part of Proposition 8 in California. Did a video out of his church, Saddleback Church, for that Proposition 8. So he got fired. They found somebody to replace him, Louis Diglio, and he was attacked because 20 years earlier, he preached a sermon that said that the blood of Christ covers the sin of being homosexual. So he was fired. So they got a homosexual Episcopalian priest for the prayer. The Boy Scouts have fired. They're getting rejected by many churches, and the Southern Baptist Association is going to recommend that nobody puts their kids in Scouts because they're willing now. They've changed their charter to accept homosexuals within Scouting. 16 million members in the Southern Baptist Convention, 45,000 congregations, and they have said, no more Scouting. Sexual orientation, there has been a legislative attack on the sexual orientation change efforts, SOCE. And Governor Brown said it's resulted in much harm, including a number of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender youth committing suicide. This is junk science and must stop. The people opposing it have no science. The people supporting it have many very pleased people who have been involved. The psychiatric associations have never questioned the medical license of any of the practitioners who do this, never criticized them. Diagnosis, when I do a diagnosis, there are code books for that, okay? They're very expensive, but they're code books. And diagnosis DSM books. The DSM book for psychiatry has removed homosexuality as a disorder. It's not a disease. When I was in medical school, the psychiatrist teaching the class kind of shocked me. Because he talked about masturbation, and he said how the psychiatrists have changed from it being an illness to a treatment. Some mentally ill patients could be taught to masturbate to help with their mental instability. And I was shocked when he said onanism. And as far as she's concerned, that is homosexual. Now, people here, I'm sure, know onanism. Onan did coitus interruptus. He didn't want to impregnate his brother's widow wife and raise seed to his brother. That wasn't homosexual. It was a man with a woman, as commanded by the law. He didn't want to do it. He pulled out, and the psychiatrists haven't read the text. They think it's homosexual. They're wrong. And I told him in class, it didn't matter to him. It didn't bother him. That's kind of the vocabulary they have. Byrne and Parsons, in 1993, reviewed 130 articles on the subject, found no evidence supporting sexual orientation determined by genetic or biologic grounds. In Wisconsin, they had a gender-bending day where they encouraged boys to dress like girls and girls to dress like boys, and they couldn't find enough people to do it. You know, when I was on my honeymoon, my wife is from Boston. She wanted to go to Cape Cod. She always did that. So I went to Cape Cod. I got reservations, and she wanted to go to the Gifford House. The Gifford House is right, you know, in deep in Provincetown. And I was with her honeymooning, and walking up and down the streets, and all these people, boys with boys and girls with girls, are holding hands and embracing and stuff, and I didn't even see it until she pointed it out. My head does not have a place for that. And the Bible says it's against nature. I didn't even see it. She pointed it out, and I could see it. And then I got an ice cream, and we went back to the room, you know, or out on the fishing boat. And so I have a problem with this. I don't even see it. I mean, it's, you know, now I had one patient in my practice. I'm an orthopedic surgeon, so I don't have a lot of, I don't treat blood pressure or diabetes. And I had one patient who had HIV. My doctor told me that all the gays in Pittsburgh have stayed in the closet and didn't come out. And after HIV became public knowledge, they were glad they were in the closet. I was on the blood bank, which all the blood transfusions in Pittsburgh go through, sitting with the head of the blood bank. And he does not have a problem with HIV in Pittsburgh. Now, I've had some patients who had HIV, and I've operated on them, and I was aware they did. And they were my spina bifida clinic. I did all the spina bifida, the large, world's largest facility for the care of spina bifida patients in the world. I wrote the e-medicine chapter on spina bifida, which is the current chapter. And some of them had had operations elsewhere, and it was kind of an international audience. They came to Pittsburgh to see me, and I've been tested. They actually tested all the orthopedic surgeons at the annual meeting, which is 5 or 10,000 at the meeting. There's 15,000 orthopedic surgeons in the United States. And there's more than that that come to that annual meeting. They found two of the people at the meeting. They were positive, and both were active drug users. And so, you know, it doesn't seem to be a problem for us. Pelosi claims to be a practicing Catholic. I have some videos that show how she says to people that ask her questions, because of Kermit Gosnell. Are people aware of Kermit Gosnell? I mean, you're in Philadelphia, so you know. That's got to be local, yeah. And Kermit Gosnell was convicted of murder because he had born alive. He had a late-term abortion clinic. The fact is, and is hidden, disguised, taken away from the public forum by the abortionists, because Kermit Gosnell was not alone in killing born babies. Obama has many times been quoted as supporting infanticide. If she comes in for abortion, kill the baby. If it's born alive, too bad, kill it. That's what he did. And since some of them were moving and crying, the testimony of nurses resulted in a conviction of Kermit Gosnell. But the problem is Gosnell was not alone. Now there's an abortion bill that should be debated soon, that is to outlaw anything after 20 weeks. And I mean, I have copies of my book. I can bring them in later. They're in my car. But stem cells and who should decide? Stem cells and cloning. But the whole abortion issue has been made political by people who are saying that it's a woman's right to choose. Well, it's not part of the woman's body. That is not scientifically true. If your wife is pregnant, she's going to get an Rh test. The husband's Rh positive and she's Rh negative. That means the baby could have erythroblastosis fetalis, die of incompatible blood. Not in the first pregnancy, but in the second one. Because the placenta puts blood all over the place. The whole scene is contaminated with blood. It'll be Rh positive if the father is. It's not part of the mother, because she's Rh negative. And that's just one example. But so Nancy Pelosi, practicing Catholic, when they ask her about babies feeling the pain, she says, that's politics. I'm not going to go there. She's a practicing Catholic. Why can't she agree with the Catholic? She made many statements to try to straighten out the Catholic Church on this position. And she still is served communion, to my understanding. The whole idea that a woman has a right to control her own body is just actually part of the fallacy, part of the lie that they tell about this. If you talk to a woman about the pregnancy, I have seven children. My wife has had seven distinct pregnancies and distinct individuals. They're all different. I mean, five sons and two lawyers. But orthopedic surgeons and lawyers are not, you know. But I got two of them admitted to the bar in Massachusetts. One of them practices in New Hampshire, but she's out of a major Boston firm. My wife was a senior secretary for a large firm of five U.S. attorneys in Boston that treated the Kennedys. And Chappaquiddick happened while she was there as the senior secretary. And, you know, the person that every secretary is supposed to copy, because that's how it's supposed to be done. Boston's like that, trusty old place. If the lady wants to kill her baby, it's legally allowed. And for the doctor to kill it after it's born alive resulted in a conviction, life conviction for Kermit Gosnell, which we understand is something that Nancy Pelosi is supporting, Obama has supported, and something that the abortionists are hiding. Things have gotten totally out of control. They seem to think that, and there's a lot of articles I had about women being deprived of the opportunity to have an abortion. Now, what they've lied about is that if a woman is pregnant and the abortion takes the baby, that means that she has already started to prepare not just the uterus, but her breasts are in transformation to provide milk. That has resulted in increased incidence of breast cancer. There are articles denying it, all of which have been scientifically transformed into that argument because the literature doesn't support it. And the risk is at least 300% greater if a woman has ever had an abortion. So that's one of the things, and they're thinking that they're missing something. Well, the mental health and suicide and other problems that go with women who have had abortions is just out of the range of reasonable. It's skyrocketed. The whole situation, though, is that the abortion community won't admit it. And then I take care of spina bifida kids, and I don't think there's a lot of spina bifida kids being born these days because of ultrasound and genetic testing. And oops, we don't want to have that happen. And there's and Down syndrome kids are not being born because they're being aborted. I mean, the whole disability issue is a war zone. I mentioned about Pelosi and that inconsistency. It seems clear that all the arguments for abortion are not sufficient to debate. That's why she cuts it off and says, well, that's political. Well, she's a politician. But the abortion being denied people is another argument that they're not winning on. So we know the Affordable Care Act was enacted when there was one vote against it. And they promised that it wouldn't be used to fund an abortion. And they lied. Not the first time. Not the last. That congressman was deceived, and the religious exception has been ignored. And we know from things that have been said in the last hour that the trampling on religious liberty is a goal of this administration. And it's a goal of the liberals that are, you know, that this administration should be done in 8 years according to the Constitution. We come back to the worldview. The worldview is basically, where did everything come from? Why are we here? I mean, those are kind of the philosophical questions that everybody asks at one time in their life. What is right and wrong? Mommy said that was wrong. I have a granddaughter who is very apt to say to my grandson, Mommy said you shouldn't do that. She's like his little mother. And we hear that every day. They're at Bible school. My wife saw him taking him to Bible school today. What happens when I die? Where will I go? Who am I? We have to get some idea of what the worldview is of all the people that are growing up in this world. And we acquire the worldview like we acquire a cold from our environment. And it offers a framework of our life and for our life. It frames reality for us. As I said, I talked to my son's friends, and I couldn't get out of them that there was anything that was right or wrong. I mean, that wasn't in their worldview. And we have to understand. I mean, my kids were... they're all my partner and former owner of my house was the president of the school board for 10 years. And this is a nationally rated high school. And so it was, and all my kids qualified for GOLE. Their IQ put them in the category, so they were specially treated. We have with the neo-Darwinian concept no grounds for the inherent value or equality of human beings. Society has ethnic cleansing. We know about anti-Semitism and gypsies and political dissidents and the elderly and euthanasia, of course, and the unborn with abortion. And so when they take a life, it doesn't matter to them. It's, you know, the whole... Imago Dei, the image of God. That doesn't matter to anybody. And all humans in the image and likeness of God, that was sort of taken for granted, that there is freedom and dignity, rule of law. Those were unknown to the Greeks and the Romans in all pagan societies. This is not evolution up. We are paganizing our society. This is going back to base, the weak survive or prosper. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is in favor of a good, productive, virtuous existence. And the rights endeavored by the Creator are not, it's like not being heard or understood. God is relegated to a myth or someone's private belief. You know, like some of the IRS attacks on Christians are like some previous ones that would say, okay, do your religion on Sunday, like pornography. Keep it out of the out of sight. Hide it. This is like the present American experiment. Our culture has become more and more secularized. Religion is relegated to a private matter, personal faith and behavior. And the norms that we accept, I think everybody in this room is too old to have been brought up in the present worldview. But I mean, I remembered right and wrong, and it was accepted. God created us, and for that reason, and in His image, and for that reason, we bear a responsibility to Him of worship and our praise. So, the mystery of human life, the freedoms as declared by courts and decisions about life and death, like abortion. We know that politics is kind of downstream from culture. I remember when I was in college, I read Francis Schaeffer's book, The God Who Was There, Escape from Reason. I have his complete set. And I spent all that time with my college and career fellowship telling them that there is a reason why your parents, and hopefully you, believe certain things. So my job as your Sunday school teacher and fellowship director is to tell you the reference to those reasons. And that's why my buddy who couldn't decide about getting married now has been married 40 years. And he came to Pittsburgh from New Hampshire to sit at my table and to look at me as his leader and his Timothy, or as Paul, because he is my Timothy, to tell me that his daughter at Bob Jones was pregnant. So they kicked her out, but he had to see my face and tell me that. I mean, that's because, not just because I've been married 40 years and have 7 kids, but because I was faithful. I taught the scriptures. The scriptures don't change. My position then was my position now. Homosexuality is in the Bible. It's a sin. That's my position. Changing political trends don't affect the Bible. It doesn't change. And culture is downstream from politics. I said before, somebody's crazy. Okay, we call that insane. I have a license to do that, to decide and to lock them up. If a bunch of people are all on the same path, we call it a cult. What do we call it if everybody is off the rocker? The word is culture. Insanity, cult, culture. That's what the former editor of the New England Journal told me. Our first freedom, the right of conscience, is being displaced by the right of sexual expression. There is no such right. And this seems to lose to sexual liberty, loses to religious liberty, loses to sexual expression in every unguided discussion. Unless there is a God, and God has told us His will and His word, then that discussion just becomes, what do you think, what do you feel? And if with our kids, we tell them that's wrong, that is not respected. If we tell them God has said, then they have to deal with Him. So the conflict shifted morality, and we have a fundamental understanding of the human person. Humans are responsible to a higher power. They're not fully autonomous. Paul said to take captive every thought, to make it obedient to Christ, Galatians 2:8. Every song, movie, television show, law, political ad, academy lecture, textbook, scripture, and sermon reflects the worldview of the people producing the item. And they have a worldview which is not guided by the Word of God, not by God's pronouncements. Hiding from the world is not our option. Active engagement is the only thing that we can do. And children see what their parents are doing more than hear what their parents are saying. Questions come up. What do you mean by that? How do you know that's true? What if they're right? What if they're wrong? Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? The key players in the culture war are the professionals. Professionals get involved with these things. They get involved. Sometimes doctors get into, you know, licensing issues and courts and so on and so forth. And that is an issue that is already happening in medicine. I don't say that lightly. I feel as if I'm shielded from it. People come to me with pain. They don't come to me for an abortion. They don't come to me because they're homosexual. They come to me because they have pain. I fix it or treat it with drugs. And they are relieved, and they return to productive employment or productive activities. That's where I am. I have had, through the years, many Timothys who saw me as Paul. For that, I can look back without regrets. I have been faithful. I have not shifted. I have not changed things. You know, when I was a kid, when I was young, James Dersham, who's elderly now, taught me about not only inspiration, but he taught me about the autonomy of the local church. He taught me about separation. He taught me about things that I wouldn't think a teenager would have understood. But I remember that stuff. I had all of the GRBC handouts, including three, the one on separation. And Ralph Colas was my pastor, and tried to get the GRBC to endorse their standing policy items. And they turned him down. I was in the deacon board when he discussed the meeting. And he had been on the Council of 18 30 out of 45 years. And they wouldn't listen to him because they wanted the big guys, the big school, the colleges, who have a inherent conflict of interest in being on that board, and that's why they couldn't do it, because it would be offensive to them. So anyhow, I learned as a high school student about those things, and I still have the 15 aging policy statements from the GRBC that I collected when I was in that missionary church where I got saved. I would be glad to entertain any questions and also provide the article that a lot of what I said came from. Yes? I go back to what I said, the word. I have flooded the emails with my news articles to my Sunday school class to tell them what's happening. I think most of it's shocking. I mean, you don't know unless you read the papers what's happening. Like I said with my abortion book, you don't know how to read the newspapers unless you... My first chapter was about terminology. So you want to understand about those things, you need to understand the terminology. They're talking about cloning. What is that? What's inducible pluripotential cells? I mean, that's what my son and I talk. He's a My son has a PhD from UCLA in molecular biology, and that's what we talk about. So I think that a casual conversation is low gain, but a consistent presentation of the value and consistency and immutability of the Word is the only answer. Question.
What kind of recommendation would you give? I have a young man who just graduated and he plans to be a doctor. He's a very focused young man and he's quite strong in his stand in the Word of God. He's going to DJ. He's going to go to DJ this fall for some early school. And what kind of recommendation do you say because of what's happening in medicine today, or what things can be helpful so that?
Well, I tell you, when I hit buzzsaws, I buzzed back. I was in rhetoric class with a guy who was just off the wall. And he said something, and I came back at it just like that. And the confrontation scared everybody in the class. Because like me, they had scholarships, and you got to keep an average to keep the scholarship. And at the conclusion of his mockery, he said, "True faith resists this." I took that as a compliment. So he gave everybody bad grades so that he could wake them up. Because I was in an engineering school. We didn't want to write. We wanted to have a secretary do that, you know. And the school wanted us to be rounded and have rhetoric and writing. And it was a required course. So I did my papers, and I passed that course, and I got a B. And B was required. And, when I hit the buzzsaws, I buzzed back because I knew the Word. I knew the Word. I spent all my time in Boston and Cambridge studying commentaries, and I have several sets. And I always loved the Ironsides commentaries, but I have Calvin's set, and I have a lot of Luther and Pink, and some things that really put me back to the Word. And that was critical. I went through the statement of faith for our church to my Sunday school class. I think I took 6 weeks. Went through all the verses and everything. And if they disagreed with me, I don't know. But they know where I stand. No doubt about that. So, any other questions? The worldview. I know it may sound a little alien to you and hard to wrap yourself around it, but just think of this. If they don't recognize that God made them and that they're responsible to Him as the owner of the universe for worship and acknowledgement and praise, that's a duty that He'll call them on. And that is the issue. And that's not part of the worldview as it exists in our society. When I spoke before the honor society at North Allegheny School, and I quoted at the end, I said, I leave you with a higher authority, and I quoted scripture. They didn't ask me back. I should have known. Should have known. It certainly does. The biggest proponent is Skinner at Princeton. The question was about bioethics, which is an up-and-coming talking point, and a lot of people are talking about bioethics. Skinner has strongly promoted infanticide. We should do abortion to save the planet. So he's really radical. And I guess that's why he got the position at Princeton. Princeton has passed Harvard now in terms of being the top school, although they don't have the same endowment or hundreds of years of graduates. My son-in-law is a graduate. But bioethics is, I have done talks on end of life. And one of the things that comes up is if someone's going to die, the hospital wants to be covered, so they call in a bioethicist. You know, and you don't know what this person's beliefs are. And so, you know, they may just be trying to couch things in a way that the people present can accept. I had one guy die on me. He was 99 years old. He had been in the same office as a podiatrist for 66 years. Broke his hip. Fixed his hip. He's up and walking in PT. And then his heart gives out. I got a call from Washington, D.C., the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. He had had a pacemaker for so long that it was nuclear. I did a study on pacemakers at MIT. And because of, you know, the early ones, you couldn't push a lawnmower. It'd stop your pacemaker. And they had to be shielded. Any pacemaker out there now that battery's not dead is shielded. So the signs that they have up around the microwaves in the cafeterias, by the time they put up the sign, all the pacemakers were shielded and they were not helping anybody. Okay? I read in the literature where somebody's in the hospital and they're looking at his EKG and they're looking at the radar out the window and there's the signal from the radar, you know. But my patient had a nuclear pacemaker. They said, "Where's the body?" "Look it, I never had anybody die before. Looks like it's too much trouble. I'm not going to have it again." I don't know where they took his body. They were trying to follow up in the nuclear material. So, I mean, I, as an orthopedic surgeon, don't deal with a lot of cancer. I see some. I don't deal with a lot of death. The hip fractures, they can have a pulmonary embolus and die. I give them all a blood thinner, and I haven't usually seen that. I never seen it with any of my total hips. And but that was the one I had. And anyhow, so a lot of doctors see people die, and that's their experience. And you know, if they have a relationship with a patient, and the patient has a church or something like that, you know. I mean, I talk a lot to my patients. I have one that operated on his back a couple times, his neck a couple times, fused his sacroiliac joint, got him back to his laboring job. And I told him that the woman I'm talking to in the recovery room is your ex-wife. And he divorced her and remarried his first wife, the mother of his children. And so anyhow, the bioethics issue is, you know, I think we have an obligation as Christians to start to say things. That's why I was involved with the end-of-life discussions. I mean, there is a form that's available in every county end-of-life that's approved by the local legal society that's a living will. I have a living will. When I was sick, my wife closed the practice, laid everybody off. She had power to do that because they told her I wasn't going to make it. And so I was in a medical coma, and, you know, I was unable to raise my right arm. I have no residuals. There's no word that I'm thinking of that I'm blocking on. I haven't had that. Had a stroke, not supposed to remember things, you know, supposed to relearn stuff, not happened. So, But the bioethics issue, I think, is a, I don't have a good source of approved bioethics. The Christian Medical Dental Society, Dave Stevens has been the president for several years. Now he's not. But he's done a lot of writing on it, and he endorsed my book on stem cells and cloning, and he's on the cover endorsement. And he is a former missionary to Kenya, many years there. Now he's a little older, and so he retired. And so I think he, and I've, he referred me to a doctor in Cedarville who does some bioethics. So I think there are some people that are, you could probably read them and see who you think is got a good Christian stand. But it's not an established field. And the ethicist that they call in is just somebody's got a psychology degree. Not any. So I just, if anybody gets critical, which doesn't happen much to me, I try to find out who their family church is. So, question? Well, it's really overblown. I'm at Pitt, so Pitt doesn't allow anybody to talk to their doctors. Harvard got an F because their doctors make too much. Their psychiatrists make too much money from the drug companies, and I do know the literature supports the absence of benefit of antidepressants for depression, except in the most extreme cases. Now, take this with a grain of salt, but when I deal with a psychiatrist, they use some of the most extreme doses imaginable, far above what anybody would do. When the psychiatrist sees them, if they're really bad, they go way over. And they know all the drugs, they know all the complications, they're really great pharmacists. And I got asked to come in to their lecture. My patient was a kid who broke his leg. On the table, I put a rod in, and I tried to twist it. It wouldn't twist. So I didn't put the cross screws in. So the next day, the nurse says, he was up naked walking on your splint, doc. And I re-x-rayed it, and he didn't twist it. After that, he went into the DTs. The DTs means positive string sign. What color is the string? No string. Purple. Positive string sign. DTs. Delirium tremors. And basically, it's every time. Definitive. And basically, he was on 1,000 milligrams of Ativan, IV, in a 24-hour period. Now, most people get one or two. And they had never seen this before. So then he was in 4-point leather restraints. And he twisted on my rod. So I had to go back and put the cross screws in. But he walked on it. So my initial OR judgment was correct. But with the leathers, he was in DTs. So anyhow, I can tell you that the literature supports the absence of benefit of most antidepressants. And unless it's a most very extreme case. The antidepressants are supported by the pharmacy drug makers, and they're all the best things since sliced bread. And we've gone through this with anti-inflammatories. There are 10 or 12 of them, all of which are equi-analgesic on full dose. If you take a full dose of Motrin, the latest thing on the block is not any better. They're all equal at full dose. If you take Motrin, you get an anti-inflammatory effect early. In the old days, we gave people two aspirins every hour until your ears ring. That's the complication of aspirin overdose. Then take two less tomorrow. That's how we treated people before Motrin. I've been around a while. I'm still only 39. No. But the antidepressants, all the studies have not proven any of them to be very effective except in the most extreme depression. My friend Pete, I'm his Paul, he's my Timothy, his wife had chronic pain. She gets ECT. No drugs helped her. She's coming off the ECT. She would sit there and stare at the floor with the grandchildren in the room. She was just, you know, totally zonked out by the drugs and the pain. She had an implant in her TMJ joint. It caused chronic pain. It didn't relieve the chronic pain. So the antidepressants are, I don't think I use any. They're supposed to be an adjuvant. My prescriptions for OxyContin are enormous. And I'm supposed to use these other things to add to the effect so that you have multiple drugs so you have less complications from each drug. That's the sales pitch. And antidepressants are not on my schedule. But I think some people may benefit greatly, and that's an individual thing. And I'll let their psychiatrist deal with it. I don't. I have some crazy people. See them frequently. Okay, thank you very much. I have a publication from the Baptist Bulletin, article I wrote on my son, who was dying in front of my eyes. And now runs a design team for Microsoft. But he can't tell me what he's doing yet till 2014.